Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 365 for comics originally released on June 4th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman 66 meets the Green Hornet number 1. This is one of six. It's co-published with Dynamite. Actually, I guess we could have done it as an indie book that way, too. But we got a better one to do this weekend. And this is set, obviously, outside the New 52. We talked about Batman 66.
Yeah, its debut. We reviewed the number one issue.
Yeah, and it was good. I think both of us kind of sort of liked it, but didn't love it. I think I gave it a 4, you gave it a 3. It was back in Weekly Comic Spotlight 310. This one worked a lot better for me because they got the likenesses, they got the tone, they got the style. The pacing I felt was a bit better here. There were a few things in Batman 66 number 1 that I felt were just a little over the top, there's no way they could have done that on the show. Here, yeah, that there was maybe a little bigger budget than they would have had for the episode, but nothing that felt just wildly, you know, unfilmable, if you will. It felt like a sequel to the classic Batman Green Hornet crossover episodes. It worked well in that regard. I thought they got, again, the likenesses really well done. This was more what I was hoping for out of the Batman 66 stuff, having only read the first issue, and maybe I should go back and read more. But I don't feel I need to follow the Batman 66 series ongoing. This is a miniseries that also gives it kind of an advantage, because it's got a beginning, a middle, and presumably an end. What was your take on this?
It felt a lot like the Batman 66 issue that I read that we reviewed earlier. It did seem a little better, and its digital presentation was very nice. I know you said it's kind of exhausting where they just show a word balloon and then another character pops on. You have to swipe to get through it, but it worked really well here. I thought it was a really nice presentation digitally, and it felt like a TV show, and felt like an episode of the show. So it was a little better than the 66, but I kind of had the same feeling. It felt a little campy, and it felt a little rooted in that time, and it was good, but it didn't blow my socks off.
I can see that. I mean, to me, it seemed to do what it set out to do, which is kind of be like a fourth season episode, if you will.
Yeah.
For a show that went 3. And it's funny because you say it was of the time, the period, and felt a little dated, I think, was kind of what you were alluding to, if that's not exactly what you said.
Yeah.
I agree with you entirely, but again, that's what they're setting out to do. So how much of that is good, bad? It's just, is that what you want or not, is what it comes down to,
yeah.
I think.
I think plenty of folks would love that. You know, big fans of the show would really like this. And that's not the style of comic that I really like. I think they did a fine job here, though. They executed it well. It's just not the kind of story that pushes my buttons.
I can see that. I mean, for me, this was just enough toned down from the first issue of Batman 66 that it was much more palatable to me. But if this were ongoing, I don't know that I would stay with it. But the fact it's a 6-issue miniseries, and it's got the Green Hornet, which to me makes it that much more interesting. Not that I was a big fan of the Green Hornet show back at the time. I mean, I was catching Batman on reruns. I don't know that I'd seen any of the Green Hornet stuff other than his appearance on Batman. I question if this needs to be 6 issues. This felt well-paced for the part 1 of a 2-parter.
Exactly.
You know, and it ended on the right kind of a story note and all of that. I'm looking forward to the next issue. I'm a little unclear what they're going to do for the other 4. But I'm at least going to go along for the ride. This kind of hit the sweet spot for me. But I think 6 issues is about all I need. You know, it's...
Yeah, I hope it's not a 6-issue General Gum storyline.
No, I hope he's going with the next issue, and then something makes sense to follow along for another 2-parter. Get the cliffhanger, you know, tune in next time to get the resolution or whatever, followed by another 2-parter.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's the pacing. Whether they go that way or not remains to be seen. but for what they seemed to set out to do, it worked. I liked the relationship they kind of played up between Britt Reed and Bruce Wayne and some of that stuff. This to me was definitely above average. It was a very solid 4 out of 5, but it's also one of those that has a very pronounced tone and style, and it may rub some people the wrong way because it's not what they're looking for, and I totally get that. But it worked well for me.
Yeah, this is about the same, a high 3. I liked it about as much as I liked 66, maybe a little bit more. I think that folks that are fans of the show will like it a lot more than I did, and they want more of that. Like you said, a season 4 sort of episode. It's going to really resonate with them a lot more than it did with me. But for me, it's just a high 3.
I can see that, and I'm curious how, if there was some way to get everybody who read this to give it a 1 to 5 rating, and then break that and group that by age, how that would play out. I'm wondering if there's an age bracket that either watched the Batman show originally or when it was just always in, you know, afternoon reruns or something, that it would appeal more towards than people who may have seen the show, but it was not the staple that it was for certain age ranges.
Yeah, I'm curious too. I'm really curious. My brother was psyched about this thing because of the Kevin Smith connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listens to his podcast, and he was really amped up about this coming out. And this doesn't. He's 11 years younger than me, so I cannot imagine this working for him. So I'm going to be very curious to see what his opinion is of this, being a lot younger, never even seen the show, maybe in a rerun occasionally, but not exposed to the reruns like I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he has any kind of connection to Batman 66 television show. So I'm going to be really curious of what his generation thinks of this.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they get it at a, not a nostalgia, but a kitsch kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
Versus some of us, because, you know, when I was growing up, you know, afternoon, after you get home from school, the 4 to 5 o'clock hour, it was on every time, you know? There were certain shows, when I was a kid, you just could not escape, and this was one of them. Gilligan's Island was another, and that was, you know, again, you get three seasons of a show, and back then that would be enough to run 2 episodes every day ad nauseum. You got to know the episodes pretty well.
Yeah.
So, but I'm glad they're doing this. I think Kevin Smith did a good job. I'm curious if they're going to do any other types of Batman 66 crossovers after this. The sort of thing I would find interesting, and it would be a little challenging for them to do, but it could be fun. Have Batman 66 crossover with the Linda Carter TV Wonder Woman and the 50s TV Superman.
That's great.
I mean, can you get
Hulk in there? No, that's wrong.
That's bubble. Marvel. So no, you could not.
How about John Wesley Shipp's Flash? Can you get him in there?
That has enough of a different sensibility because it's again from, that was what, 90s or was that at late 80s?
Yeah, that was 80s, late 80s, I think.
But, I mean, the earlier shows had enough of a similar sensibility that it would be fun to see those takes on those characters interact. I think it could work.
Nice.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Amazing X-Men Annual #1. This came out the same week as Amazing X-Men #8. And yes, that does cause me a little bit of a headache for my spreadsheet I'm using to track everything I'm reading this year. We really should have read #8 instead of this, I think. This had a lead story, it had a backup story. The lead story I thought was good, it was fine, it was okay, it was kind of a Dunham one, which I really appreciated, because I don't think it needed to be any longer than it was. There was nothing wrong with it, it just seemed like, well, we got an annual, we gotta put a story in it, and we'll just go with this. There was an aspect that felt uninspired, a little bit of going through the motions. It's just another X-Men story. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I mean, this does have a $4.99 cover price. It is an annual. It's got the word amazing in the cover, so I was something, you know, looking for something, I don't say necessarily amazing, but a little more than we got. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me you thoroughly loved this.
Nope. It was average, and, you know, I've stopped reading this title anyway, so
really,
yeah,
that's disappointing because it's a good title.
I dropped a lot of the X books, so it's no offense to just this one. I don't read it. Don't read any of them. So it was just okay. Like you said, it's the nice to get a little profile of Storm, I guess, you know. You know, maybe that's what they're going to use the annual for, is to profile, you know, standalone stories for each of the characters. I don't know what they were going for, but it was just an average comic and nothing special. And I like my annuals to be something special.
Mm-hmm. Something that stands out, something that needs the extra space, and isn't just another run-of-the-mill kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing inherently wrong with this. There were a couple of places the art was really good. There were a few other places it was just kind of there.
Well, what about the stuff in the back?
The backup feature?
Yeah, with all the little art pages and things.
Yeah, and that let's go there.
I don't get it. I don't. Who's been clamoring for this? Who would appreciate these little add-on things? I lost interest three or four in.
Wow, you made it longer than I did.
Yeah,
you get to the first two pages and it's like little kid crayon type drawing, and it's done for the specific art style. I get it, that was intentional. But man, to me this wasn't a comic book story. This was an illustrated story. There's art, there's captions, but the two are not really interacting and intertwined. And, you know, after those two pages, we get another two pages where it's more, you know, junior high school level art, if you will. And not bad for that. Some of it's actually kind of good. Then we get a graffiti style and then more of a mosaic abstract style. And then near the end, it's getting a little better. But we're switching art styles and I really couldn't even tell you what story it was, because I was so turned off by it so quickly that it just, and there's nothing, the art set out to do, did what it set out to do perfectly. I just was so not wanting what it was setting out to do, you know, that between that and it, again, illustrated story, comic book story, to me, very different things, but easily confused. This was narrating a story with some pictures around it, and the whole thing just really turned me off. It, for me, was a complete waste of space.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that, because I know some people worked really hard on this, tried to do a really good job, and I'm not saying they didn't. I'm saying I'm not the target audience for what they were trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. It was, I don't even know if it was an average comic with the $5 price tag and the backup feature stuff that, yeah, I don't know who that's for. It drug it down below the average for me and made it a two.
I went with a low three, but I think a case could be made that I'm being fairly charitable to it. The lead story was good enough that I can't really drag it down to the two, but when you do factor in the price, I certainly do not fault you whatsoever for your rating there. I think it was a major misfire. It's overpriced for the value I personally got out of it. And I hate to say that, because I'm really loving the title overall. I just think the stories, the lead story they chose to tell and the artistic storytelling direction they did for the backup story were choices that don't work for me. I'm curious what, a larger segment of the readership of it would think. I've got to imagine that there are going to be some people who love it, but that they're going to be more in the minority.
Yeah, I'm sure some diehard X fans or Storm fans would just eat this up, but I don't even know if that's the case. It wasn't that great of a story.
I don't know that they would eat it up. I think they might accept it and say it's all right, it's not that bad, but
might have been a high three for them.
Yeah. And again, there are going to be some people who do consider it a 5 out of 5, but I would really love to hear how and why. Maybe there's something here I've just missed, or it's targeted to a very different audience than me. Particularly the backup story. I mean, that just hit some techniques that just don't work for me. Whereas issue number 8, I thought was a really solid story, had some great stuff in it. Really kicked that story into high gear in short order, and I'm looking forward to that continuing. You know, on a monthly basis, it's a good title. This was just not a great issue to have checked out.
No.
Shall we move on to our independent book of the week?
Yes, sir.
This is Big Trouble in Little China, number 1, from Boom Studios. This is the continuing adventures of Jack Burton and the Porkchop Express. When was the last time, or have you even, watched Big Trouble in Little China?
If I saw the entire movie, it would have been late 80s or so, early 90s.
I think we're going to have very different takes on this comic. I watched the movie over the weekend, rewatched it.
Good call.
This picks up right on the, not even right on the heels, it picks up on the last scene of the movie, because he's driving in the rain, given this opening dialogue. We see the demon or whatever that's on the bottom of the first page here. You flip the page and now it's new material. Big Trouble in Little China is a great film. It's a fun film. And part of what really makes it work is the character of Jack Burton has got such a unique style and voice and is so memorable. And it's funny, because really, it's just Kurt Russell doing a John Wayne impersonation to a large extent, but being an 80s or whatever truck driver, you know, 1980s truck driver or whatever. At least I think it was 80s. It might have been late 70s. Anyways, I think they captured the style very well. The art fit what they were trying to do. I don't know how well this would work for somebody such as yourself that hadn't just seen the movie.
Well, I liked its humor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought its humor was good. I liked the art. It was reminiscent of the actor, but not, you know, a spot-on ripoff. You know, you could see it in certain panels a little more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And it did remind me of that voice of that movie. I couldn't remember specifics. You know, I knew as some of the plot points were revealed, I recognized some of the phrases. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. That was the one guy, yeah. So I have a vague recollection of this movie, and it seems like it's speaking with that voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems very authentic. I thought it had a lot of funny stuff in it, and I liked it. Its type of humor, and I thought it worked.
How did the part with his second wife, which to me seemed like a 2.5 page aside, how did that work for you? Because for me, it slightly derailed the issue.
I thought it was just like a funny, you know, anecdote the guy's telling, you know, mm-hmm. to get from point A to point B, and it, you know, wackiness ensues, and it kind of he lived quite a crazy life, and so he's really I thought it was a nice funny break in the story, and I really liked. I thought it was funny. I laughed.
I think it would have played really well with, Kurt Russell's narration, the voiceover, getting the images. I could see this either, I almost want to say in a sequel movie, but I'm going to go with if it had become a TV series. Because that's sort of what this felt like. There's a very different pacing you do for more of an ongoing story than just a done-in-one movie. And that seemed to be the direction they were heading here. It was interesting just how many callbacks there were to the movie, in sometimes literally, in other cases, just again tone and style. But that character, again, had such a unique voice. It was very easy to hear the lines of dialogue as if Jack Burton was speaking them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, it felt very authentic, that voice. And overall, it was a fantastical storyline. So it was a little out there. So, you know, you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, which is fine. And I thought it was intriguing enough, and there was enough good stuff on the page to make you want to say, okay, I'll follow this character a little bit more. I'll see where he goes. You know, it's not all set up. There's a lot of good story in here.
And that's true.
It catapults you right into the next, you know, nice cliffhanger. Mission accepted, and we're going to follow that into what that mission is next in the next issue. And it looked like something I would want to read.
Are you gonna?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah.
I thought this issue ended on just the right kind of a story beat, the right kind of a moment, the right lines of dialogue. And acted kind of as a clincher for, yeah, they clearly, obviously Carpenter, John Carpenter, the director and stuff is involved in this, but the team really got the tone and the style of the movie down pat. I think a fair amount happened here. You're right. We got well past the setup into the meat of the story. I still would have liked it a little bit more to have happened in here, but that may have also just been the couple of pages with the second wife, ex-wife or whatever, just didn't play well for me and whatnot. I don't have future issues of this on pre-order. And it's one of those where this was good. It did exactly what it set out to do really well, but that didn't entirely convince me I need to add this to my order. I didn't feel I shouldn't add it to my order either. I'm really a little undecided on this. if it had had a little more story content, that might have been enough. It's certainly not lacking in terms of tone and style. But, I mean, to me, Big Trouble in Little China movie is great fun, really well done, worth a rewatch. Glad I did that right before this. But it's, again, if it had gone to TV series, would I have followed it? You know, this is going to a comic book series. We're going to get the continuing adventures of Jack Burton. How much of that plays over the long term or becomes a bit of a one-note sort of a deal? And I don't think it's going to be on the one-note side. It just, I'm not sold that this is the right title for me. I'm not sold that it's not. Very solid 4 out of 5, though. They did a great job. They got the right creative team on this. They extended the tone and the style. They didn't just kind of ape it and mimic it. They got it, and I appreciate that.
Yep, for me it's a 4 as well. It's good. It's good enough for me to check out another issue, and so I'm going to stick around a little bit and see what happens to the character, because he was pretty interesting and he had some nice humor, nice one-liners in there. So it's something I want to stick around for.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, part of it for me is, you know, we just did the preview spotlight and stuff. The next round of solicits are going to be coming out any day now. And as I'm going through my order every month, I'm realizing I'm getting a lot of comics. I think I've got like over 200 active titles in follow-up. And it comes down to, you know, how many do I need to be adding or not? And because there are a couple of weeks, it's getting hard to get through everything. It's fun. It's good. But again, it's a fairly big reading list.
I don't know how you do it.
Well, I tell you, the one title that's really not helping right now, Iron Man. It seems like every time I turn around, there's another issue coming out. We've gotten like 3 or 4 issues in the last couple of weeks. There are some weeks it's easier to get everything read than others. This was a little bit of a smaller week for me. There was, I think I got like 42, 43 items compared to like 54 or 65 or some craziness from a few previous weeks. Some good stuff, though. Really good issue of Battlestar Galactica. Nice done in one story there. Good issue of Batman Eternal. What's going on with Aquaman and the others was a lot of fun. Again, that issue 8 of Amazing X-Men. Well worth checking out. Unfortunately, we did the annual, but c'est la vie. What else came out that was really good?
Well, I added Green Lantern back to on my reading list, or Green Arrow back on my reading list, because I'd kind of fallen off during that long 6-issue other, what was the other war or something like that?
Oh, the different tribes or whatever.
Yeah. So I took that off and I popped back on and checked it out again. It wasn't a bad issue. It feels a lot closer to the show than it used to.
Oh yeah. They've gone very much in that direction.
And so I kind of enjoyed that, since, you know, it's the off season. The show is on hiatus until the next season. So it's kind of a nice filler. I'm kind of glad I added that back in. Just a slew of great Marvel stuff this week too, though. I mean, the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man, I think that's really good.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. They're going in some very interesting directions there. I'm curious how that story is going to play out.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. The Moon Knight is still good. I was sad to hear the creative team's leaving at 6. And
really, that's short. That's quick.
Yeah, both. Jordy Belair is going to stay on for Colors, but they're going to lose Declan Shalvey and Warren Ellis and bring in Brian Wood. He's going to do the writing, and a guy named Smallwood, last name is Smallwood, is going to do the art. And I'm not familiar with what he's done.
Yes, so, I was thinking that was Brian's younger brother or something.
Yeah, a little Wood. Little Wood would be also there.
Just that's wrong. Sorry.
So I'm anxious. It doesn't feel like Warren's story is going to be able to actually say what it was supposed to say, I guess, in 6 issues. After reading this 4th one, maybe it wasn't ever really going to say anything. Maybe it was just going to be what it was, and I guess that's okay. Yeah. I thought there was going to be some more to it, but I guess after 6 issues, that's going to be that. And then Brian Wood is going to come in, who has a very different style, and I'm anxious to see what he does with this character, and I hope it works. I hope the public like it, because I think it's still selling okay.
I hope it's not a radically different take on the character, because I think this is a fairly big departure from what's gone before. I think it works well, but I would be very disappointed if any other creator comes in and says, but now we're going to take a sharp left turn and do this. You know, it's like, you got to be true to what the title is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, six issues in to switch creative teams. I get it. It happens. It's still disappointing.
And what about Original Sin number 3? Holy smokes. That, I don't even know what you can say about that one.
That series is still not firing on all cylinders for me. Did you read Mighty Avengers last week?
No.
That was a good tie-in issue.
Yeah, I was going to sit all the tie-ins out and just read these 8. Unless it's in a book that I'm already reading.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
Again, I thought the Mighty Avenger issue was a nice approach to the crossover story.
Yeah. I didn't see, that coming. So it did catch me off guard. So that was nice. Superior Foes of Spider-Man was nice to have the Lieber and... who's the writer? Nick Spencer, back on it. There were some good issues without them, but this was great again. And you know, from the sounds of the previews, Solicit, I guess this is going to go away here pretty soon.
I think we get another issue or two of it, maybe. That is a shame, but you know, it's based on where it's selling. Because let's see. By the way, to answer your question, Moon Knight's doing a little above 40,000, a little under 41 actually.
But that's pretty solid.
Superior Foes, that's down at like 18,000.
Yeah, I knew it was in the teens, and you can't live there in the Marvel world.
No,
they don't have a Vertigo to hide you there, so that's unfortunate. I'm gonna miss that. I'm gonna miss that book, and I'm gonna miss that type of book. And I hope they try something else like that, but there's really no encouragement for them to do so if there's no sales there.
The possible encouragement is that it builds up interest in some of those characters, but I mean, they're villains. Is that really gonna buy them anything long term? I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun though.
It has. I like when they take different approaches to these things, think a little outside the box, yet keep the characters true to who they are, who they were. You know, and Marvel's got a lot of titles that are really firing on all cylinders right now. I think that was one of them, even though it wasn't necessarily selling, you know, gangbusters. It worked a lot better than I think anybody would have expected. Because I think that was one that when it launched, it's like, really, they're going to do this? That just seems like they're cashing in on the Superior Spider-Man stuff. And it was, but it held its own.
Yeah, and in its own little genre, too. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was a unique title on the racks, and again, given how many Marvel and DC ones alone there are, that says something.
Now, the Batman Eternal, he meets the Batman of Japan in that issue.
Yes.
Is that a Batman Inc. Previous volume character? Because I don't remember it from the Batman Inc. New 52.
It was from the previous one. Batman Inc. was one of those titles that kind of sort of kept continuity over the New 52 jump. I say kind of sort of because a couple of the characters that were in some of the later issues, specifically the Batgirls, aren't in the New 52. They just don't, one of them doesn't seem to exist at all. Another one's only recently been seen. So how that title could have played out in the New 52 universe, it had to have been different than what we saw. But yeah, that was one of the characters from Batman Inc., and the Canary character was from Super Young Team, which that was an interesting group of characters too.
Also from Batman Inc.?
No, that was from Final Crisis? Somewhere around that time. It was another one of the Grant Morrison teams or whatever at one point.
Well, the Gillum March art is really good in these last few issues that he's been the artist on.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really great. And this book, I mean, Eternal's really a solid title. And I don't know if the issues are ever going to be fives, but they are solid fours, you know, in my mind. And this is 9 in a row that have been really solid stories, and I've enjoyed them, and the momentum's been there, and the experiment is a success in my mind so far for DC.
Well, I guess in my mind, Batman Eternal is not a title. A weekly title is not one where you really shoot for the 5 out of 5. If you get it, that's awesome. But there's, I almost want to say that meat grinder aspect to it of just how many you're churning out and how quickly. That if you can keep a consistent quality to it, that's a win right there.
That's what I think. A 9 fours in 2 months, 2.5 months is pretty good. You know,
they only got 8 of those for me. 7 was a little bit of a just an okay issue.
Yeah, you're right. There was a misstep in there, but not bad. Not
solid,
bad.
consistent quality 9 weeks in a row, that's impressive. It comes down to how's it going to play out and how soon are we going to start circling back and how often on some of these other stories that were introduced that we really haven't touched back on yet.
You know, yeah.
As of issue 9, the whole bit with Tim Drake and stuff, that was from, what, issue 2 or 3? And I don't know that we've really circled back on that.
Yeah, we need to do that, too.
I mean, there's a lot going on in that book.
Yeah, and they have to stick the landing. That's true. But I think this has been a lot of fun. And I think it was either last week or the week before when we had Batman 31. And, you know, that was a great issue. There's only two more issues of Zero Year. So that's going to finish up in time for the September. What is it? 5 years forward? Five years later?
Five years later. Yeah.
5 years later. So it'll finish up before that. I don't know what happens to the weeklies. Hopefully they just keep trucking along and don't have to take a break.
I believe the plan is for them to pause for that month.
Okay. And then, you know, well, whatever that is and how that works out. And then I think the Bat title and Eternal they join. They're back in current continuity together. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Batman title getting back to present day. The Zero Year stuff's been a lot of fun, but I'd like to see more Batman present day, which is funny since we have Detective, we've got Batman, and we've got, you know, Dark Knight, we've got, you know, so many damn different titles. It is kind of funny.
Yeah, they seem like very different titles.
Yeah. Different titles, almost different continuities in some respects.
Detective's nothing like Batman and that just seems like it's its own little world right now, looking for Robin, and it just seems totally disconnected from everything, which is fine. They've been good.
Well, it's fine for it to be able to stand on its own, but I think the new 52 titles are a little too disconnected from each other. The Wonder Woman we see in Justice League doesn't seem like the one we see over in her title, and the one in her title is not that much like the one we're seeing in Superman Wonder Woman, which is more like the Justice League one. You know what I mean? There are some connections, there are some tie-ins, it's not like they're completely divorced, but there's a lack of cohesion and cohesiveness at times that, I mean, Marvel's got similar problems at times over there, too, in terms of staying in, I don't want to say in lockstep, but staying in sync.
But isn't that because just the sheer number? I mean, back earlier, 10 titles a month each publisher was putting out or something like that? It was probably a lot easier to keep those, you know, in continuity, and everybody knew what everybody was doing, and they crossed over and made sense, and it's probably a lot more difficult with the vast number of titles that they're cranking out all the time.
Well, certainly the vast number of titles, the vast number of interconnected titles, just the number of Batman family titles, the number of X-Men titles, certainly makes it a little harder to keep everybody in sync. Storylines that go for half a year versus an issue make things a lot harder. And I'm not trying to suggest it's a trivial thing to do, but that as a reader, I like it when the world feels coherent. Not, wait, how can this be going on here with this character if his status quo is this over there? And there have been enough times I'm feeling that it makes me aware of the storytelling mechanics versus getting immersed in the story.
Yeah, I was wondering about that with Wolverine. Is he killable in all the titles now?
Far as I know.
Is that translated to all of them? So, okay. I was wondering if maybe he's a different Wolverine in each book.
Not that I'm aware of, but there are also a few things where certain titles are clearly, not so much with Wolverine specifically, but in other instances where you've got characters in different books, certain things are clearly happening a little before certain titles or after certain storylines or, you know, staggered as to work around changes from other stories, you know. But, I mean, Wolverine's got too many titles. He's in too many X books. I like the character. It's fun to see him and all that stuff, but they need to have somebody in the editorial staff kind of keeping things reasonably consistent. You know, again, answering the question of is he killable in all the books or not. You know, on the one hand, does that matter? Maybe not. On the other hand, but if it doesn't matter, then why should we care about any of the stories?
Are they really, you think, going to kill him off?
Oh, yeah. I think he'll be dead and never come back ever again. End of story.
Well, temporarily.
Hugh Jackman has just really, I think, annoyed people at Marvel, and they can't kill him; they have to kill the character.
I think maybe it'll be a good way to purge him from all the books, and then reintroduce him slowly.
I think if they were gonna I'm surprised they didn't kill him earlier so as not to promote the new X-Men movie that just came out.
Because we know that would have totally stopped it from doing 600,000.
Exactly. That's exactly what would have happened. It would have tanked the movie big time. The entire franchise would have... Sony would have just collapsed. Or was it Fox? Whichever one's doing it, I forget.
The power of the comic book industry.
Yes, yes. At least in their own minds. This whole bit of are they going to kill him or not, I'm getting a little tired of the shenanigans. You know, actually, it was issue 8 of Amazing X-Men that starts with Colossus and Nightcrawler, seeing each other at the school, and Colossus is, you know, really happy to see Nightcrawler. And again, this is like in the first couple of pages. Hopefully I'm not spoiling it for anybody, and if so, sorry. But it's not like it's a key story point. But one of the things that Nightcrawler mentions is, but I went to your funeral too. I mean, every X-Men has died at some point, including Wolverine. You know, they all get better. Yeah. And it just cheapens the stakes. You know, it becomes video game mentality in terms of, well, you just hit the reset and they're back.
Well, there was a pretty graphic death this week, and so I'm anxious to see if that comes back. That would be amazing to see. So I'm going to keep my ear to the ground on that one and be very disappointed if they, you know, retcon that one.
They've brought back the Bucky. They've brought back Jason Todd. Who other the ones that will never come back from the dead sorts of characters? Hal Jordan, Barry Allen over at DC. Nobody stays dead. You know, it's yeah. A shame.
What am I thinking? Yeah, they'll all be back.
You know, I think part of that comes down to when they kill them, they don't really think long terms of is that the right thing for the narrative universe, the characters, and the franchise. And I certainly don't want certain characters to become unkillable in that regard, because that's no fun either. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Again, we just did the preview spotlight. The next one of those is gonna be previews will come out on the 25th. That puts the deadline on July 5th, and I'm kind of gonna leave it there. Try to get clips in early so you don't have to worry about it over the 4th of July weekend. Alas, I will be worrying about it because that's when I'll be assembling the episode.
Yeah, if you get your previews, and you're going to have July 4th off anyway, most of you, and, you know, you don't have anything to do until that evening, you know, to go see any fireworks anywhere. So get your clips in that day.
Yeah.
It'd be perfect. Perfect day for that.
Be great to do. Again, the September solicits are the Future's End stuff for a lot of the DC things, so another opportunity to promote some of those if you want. And those solicits should be going up sometime this week. As soon as I see them, I'll put a link on the forum. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
That will do it for me.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Infinity Man and the Forever People number 1 from DC, Hulk number 4 from Marvel, and Armor Hunters number 1 from Valiant. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.